What's going on there, youth pastors? Paul Turner here from the DiscipleProject.net and your host of the Youth Ministry Motion Podcast, the podcast that wants to keep you motivated and your youth ministry moving forward. How are you today? Keeping the intro short today because the information of this episode is so important, I don't want to take any more time than I have to. So ask yourself a question. How safe is my youth ministry? That's quite the question, right? Something you're going to have to think about. How safe is my youth ministry? How safe is it from bullies? How safe is it from bad actors who want to get involved and cause chaos in your ministry? That is what Lori Morrison and myself are going to talk about today. Lori is a private investigator, has worked on many cases involving churches and youth ministries, and she is going to drop some wisdom bombs on you today about how to create a safer youth ministry. We're going to talk about practices. We're going to talk about protocols. We're going to be talking about very, very practical things today that are going to create a safer environment for your students. Before we jump into today's topic, did you know that graduation's right around the corner? It sure is. It's going to be right here. It's going to be on top of you before you know it. The question I would ask you is, are you going to launch your students well? Are you going to launch them with a little bit of class? Well, if you don't know the answer to those questions, if you're struggling to put all the graduation pieces together, I have put together a graduation guide that's filled with practical ideas, book suggestions, articles, sample graduation service outlines, and over 40 slideshow song suggestions. So if you are not signed up for my newsletter yet, this is a great opportunity to do so. Because if you sign up, I'll put a link down in the description below. Get signed up. You're going to get the Launching Them Well, the Youth Pastor's Guide to Graduating Your Students with Class. And then every week, you're going to get videos, articles, freebies, all kinds of stuff that will make you happy that you subscribed to the newsletter. Alrighty, are you ready to make your youth ministry safer? Well, let's go ahead and bring Lori onto the show. And Lori Ann, welcome to the show.
Well, I am so honored to be here. Thank you for having me on to chat.
Yeah, and it is a fascinating topic that we're going to talk about today. And the fact that churches, who find themselves in difficult places would need a private investigator to investigate things that are going on. And I don't mean that to say that the church is somehow separate or apart from having difficulties. But the fact that what we're going to talk about today and your role in those things, it just floors me, I guess. It just like, oh, I really didn't think of that a private investigator might be needed here.
And I think it's more that it's the perspective of a private investigator. You know, I've seen things that maybe a lot of people haven't seen, dealt with issues that a lot of people don't know are out there, or worse, they think they are just out there. They don't realize that they're affecting us in our communities and even in our congregations. And I've been on a church staff years ago, so I understand that perspective as well. I know how hard it can be to bring awareness, to get people talking about tough things, and to make some changes. And certainly nothing I say today is meant to be any sort of condemnation, because a lot of it is just, you don't know what you don't know. Are there bad actors out there? Yes. Thankfully, most of them aren't the kind of people that are going to be listening to us anyway. So that's not who we're talking to today. Right. We're talking to the people that need to know how to spot those bad actors.
Right. Exactly. And I'm glad that you brought that up, Lori, that you have served on a church staff, because I think that's an important element, that you understand church culture, those things. Do you have any background in youth ministry, or did you grow up in youth group? Do you have any connection in that way?
Well, I always say I was raised a heathen. I believe I was instilled a lot of traditional Judeo-Christian values, but not necessarily from a standpoint of, because we have a relationship with Christ, this is why we do this. It was, this is what good people do. And so there was, you know, just that little difference. But then as an adult, I started realizing that that just wasn't enough. And so thankfully, looking back, I can see how God pursued me my whole life And finally, I was smart enough to give in and say, yes, my life will be so much better if you're in control of it rather than me. And so I didn't have that, you know, go to VBS, go to church camp with the youth. That's not part of my background. But I raised two daughters in the church. And so through them, I've seen how that works well. I've seen how it doesn't work well. When I was on a church staff, my role was in the children's ministry. And so I tried very much to work with the youth leaders because I felt like, you know, where do you want these kids to be when they kind of pass from the children's area to the youth area? What do they need to know? What do they need to understand so that you can build on that? So even though I didn't work directly in the youth ministry, I tried really hard to work and be a part of kind of the overall plan for developing kids in their faith.
Sure. And you weren't at the time when were you a private investigator when your kids were coming up in youth?
No, I wasn't. I wish I had been. So
if I was the youth pastor, that would make me unbelievably nervous. I'd be like, hey, your mom's a private investigator, huh? Oh, okay. I'm going to shut down all my social media right now. And that's, we're never going to go back there.
Well, I have a new baby granddaughter. I'll use it on her when she gets
there. Right. And when she gets old enough, her parents will say, you know, Meemaw is a private investigator. Exactly. She will find things out. Okay. So behave yourself. So, and how long after, I mean, you were in the church on church staff, those things, when did you say, I'm going to become a private investigator? When did that suddenly hit you? Because I think most parents are private investigators. I mean, by rule, they're private investigators. They are privately investigating their children and what they're doing. When did you say, well, I need to take this to a whole nother level and actually become a private investigator?
Yeah, I hope every parent considers themselves that person, and not only in your children's lives, but in the lives of people that are speaking into their lives. But I had always been interested in solving puzzles. You know, I love that, starting out with like Encyclopedia Brown and then graduating to Agatha Christie, Earl Stanley Garter. That kind of thing always fascinated me. And then that kind of fed into a true crime, I don't want to say obsession, but interest, because I wanted to know why. Why do these people think that it's okay for them to act that way? And that thought was even before I was a Christian. But then looking at it through that lens of faith, I'm like, now I really don't understand, aside from the fact that they're lost. And so I had worked in a probation department. I'd worked in a domestic violence court. And so I had seen, you know, that the criminal justice system and how things work out there or don't work out there. And I was actually working in a corporate para-ministry setting in a small in-house legal department. And a news article, a news show actually on TV came up. And they were talking about a couple of guys being sentenced in a case that I'd always been interested in. A young girl had been kidnapped, sexually assaulted and murdered. And she was about the same age as my oldest daughter. And they even kind of looked alike. And so I had always followed that case because I just thought, who would help my family? You know, the authorities, for whatever reason, were not making much progress there. And I saw, what do you do? Where do you turn? And they interviewed a private investigator that the family had hired. And she was a woman. So I found that very fascinating. You see more of it now, but not as much then. And so she didn't live very far from me. And in a little bit of chutzpah that I think only God could inspire, I thought, I can help this lady. I just need to call her and tell her, hey, I can help you. And of course, she'll say, yeah, that's a great idea. So I looked her up on her website, sent her a message. And then I thought, she's going to think I'm a lunatic. But thankfully, she did not. And so we met and I said, you know, if I can take the skills I already have and just help with case files, reviewing documents, anything, whatever, I'd love to help. And so that's how it started. And then one day she said, you know, you could do this. Well, that was not on my bucket list. I hadn't considered that. But I decided that if having those skills, having a license that gave me the ability to do some things that not all the average people are allowed to do, then if I could help families, that's really what I wanted to do. And so I've been a licensed private investigator for several years. And then just in the last, I don't know, couple of years, God has really been speaking to me that, you know, people of faith need to be leading the charge here. We always like to say, oh, you know, we don't want to think about ugly, terrible things. That doesn't happen here. I hate to burst your bubble, but it does. You might not see it. You might not know it, but it's there. And so really speaking to churches and saying, you know, your church has safety problems. Now, I'm not saying that to be critical. Everybody does. They just don't know it. So how can I come alongside you and give you the benefit of what I've seen, what I know? I'm on my own church safety and security team. Let me help you customize solutions that work for your church, because every church is different. Our physical buildings are different. Sometimes we don't even own the building, so there's only so much we can do. Our volunteer capacity is different everywhere. Our financial resources and our church culture. I mean, we hinted at that a little bit. What is our church in the moment ready to absorb? What changes are they ready to make? And let's just start where we can. Start where you are.
Yeah, there's talk about church culture, the fact that there's a lot of churches who are very in-house. They like to take care of their own business. They don't like anybody knowing their business. And so
I just want to jump in and say, how has that worked out for any church you've seen do that?
Yeah, not as well as they probably thought it was going to work out. And I think that's a, I think that's an important part too, is that when the church, you know, the local church congregation has to know when they can't do everything, and that they have to realize that, you know, some protocols are needed for change, because if they don't, then the end result is, like you said, it's usually not very good. So tell me then, and tell our audience and those that are watching, those that are listening, tell me some situations that you've seen in your work with churches, and specifically youth ministry, because we, majority of our folks that are listening and watching are youth pastors. Tell me more about those types of situations. And you don't have to be, you can tell as much or as little as you care to do about every, you know, those things. But just tell me some of the things that you've seen out there that maybe youth pastors may not be aware of.
Probably something that most people would be shocked to hear is that the number one growing method of recruitment into human trafficking situations is young girls recruiting other young girls. And so it's happening in our schools. It can be happening in the youth group, but even if it's not happening on your church grounds, if it's happening in the schools where your kids are, it's happening to your kids. I had a case a few years ago, and it was actually a cold case homicide. So we did not expect to stumble across this, but we had a teenage suspect, minor, in fact. And in the course of our investigation, we found out that she was drugging and trafficking her friends. So we had to, that was a whole separate issue from what we were looking at. So we had to notify the proper authorities to check into that. But, you know, I think we have, especially sticking with the trafficking scenario, we tend to think it's some really gross looking dude with a windowless van who just snatches people off the corner.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that that never happens. But what also happens is what they call Romeo trafficking. You're going to be approached by first a girl. She's going to introduce you to her friend, who quickly becomes your new boyfriend. And then suddenly he's isolating you from everybody you know. And he's saying, hey, we need some quick cash, and I know how we can do it if you'll just help me out this one time. So girls and guys are trafficked too, but they don't wake up one day saying, really think I would like to see what the commercial sex trade is like.
And you've seen girls in youth ministry, kids that are, you know, there's normal kids that are going to youth group, get caught up in this.
Yep. And because people are unaware, because people have fallen into the completely understandable mindset is that's not something I have to worry about here. I've spoken with a couple of different women. I didn't work their cases, but interviewed them for my podcast. They were part of a church going family. And they were trafficked by their family members. A totally different topic. You've got teen dating violence that is starting to reach epidemic proportions, or at least the awareness of it it's always been there. The awareness of it is making it seem like it's this suddenly new big thing. So you got to be aware of, you know, what does a girl or a guy look like when they're being abused by a dating partner, because it doesn't always look like you think it would. And I talked to someone in reference to adults just the other day, but I said, let's just get out in front of the question everybody asks, why don't they just leave? And she said, let's change one word. Why don't they escape? And if we look at it that way, we've got, I think, a lot more empathy, a lot more compassion. And it moves us to action more, because it is so much harder than people realize. You're shamed. You might actively be being threatened, you know, with the internet, with people, oh, hey, just send me this sexy little picture of you. Well, now I'm going to share it with everybody if you break up with me. That is so much more prevalent. And, you know, you and I, when we were growing up, that wasn't even a possibility. We just didn't have the tools. Knowing that these things can happen, knowing that these things do happen, bullying. Again, that can be a very shameful thing for people to confess that they're being victimized. And that amazes me. You think the bullies would be the ones who should be ashamed that they're acting that way.
You would think.
So one thing we also, and this should go without saying, but unfortunately it doesn't, so I'm going to say it. We have to be willing to hold people's confessions in confidence. I've spoken to so many young girls who struggled with something, finally felt like they could express what was going on and get some help, only to have a small group leader. Well, you know, I have to share that with my husband because there should never be any secrets between a husband and wife. Well, I'm really glad that that lady's not a doctor or a psychiatrist or a lawyer. But why in the church do we just suddenly default to that? Or a youth pastor says, well, now I have to tell my senior pastor. And there are times when you have to tell, because you need to know if you're a mandated reporter.
That's right.
If you're suspecting abuse, you could actually be prosecuted for not coming forward if your jurisdiction calls you a mandated reporter. I think biblically we're all mandated reporters, because there are so many Bible passages that tell us, you know, carry one another's burdens, and that's how you fulfill the law of Christ. Speak up for those who don't have a voice. Be a champion of those who are oppressed. You know, if that's not enough to tell you you're a mandated reporter, I don't know what law is going to make you.
Absolutely. So what would you say then? And we're going to get into the broader aspects of how a youth pastor can make their youth ministry safer. But let's talk directly then to youth pastors who, for the most part, will hear these confessions. These youth pastors that maybe they have, you know, some helpers and so forth. But usually a lot of this stuff comes through a volunteer. Maybe you have a volunteer, or maybe if you're just a youth pastor, they feel like students are going to go to that youth pastor and say, hey, can we talk about this? So what are some things then that a youth pastor needs to be aware of? And you can start with the spotting aspect. Like, what are we looking for? What are youth pastors looking for before it gets to that point? What are we looking for so we can maybe avoid some of these things? And then move into, okay, so somebody comes to you and says, hey, you know, my boyfriend is doing this, or I'm being bullied by so-and-so. But if you can start from the signs and then move into when that confession happens, how does a youth pastor handle that?
Yeah, those are great points to address. A lot of it, I think, is just that situational awareness. We talk about that a lot with physical safety, but I think it's there with emotional and spiritual safety as well. Just be paying attention to what's going on. Do you have somebody who is really, really bubbly, who is suddenly very subdued? A lot of times we say, well, it's not my business. It is our business. To kind of paraphrase Jacob Marley from A Christmas Carol, mankind is our business. And so, first of all, let's get over that. And there may be a perfectly reasonable explanation. But until you know what that explanation is, then you owe it to that person to think they might be in some sort of distress where they need some help. And so just let them know, first and foremost, that you are a safe person to talk to. That has to be the culture of your youth group. You will be listened to. You will not be shamed. You will not be blamed. Your confidences will not be shared unless I'm required by law or I really believe there is a major safety issue that we need to talk about. So you've got to let people know. You can't just blindly promise them, well, I'll never tell anybody anything. And then suddenly they drop this bomb on you where you're like, well, I have to tell somebody.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than a youth pastor that breaks a trust that then affects everything going forward. Because if you break that trust, other kids then ask, will they break my trust?
Oh, exactly. And when you break that trust too, you have to wonder, is that going to be something that causes this person not just to walk away from the youth group, not just to walk away from the church, but to walk away from their faith? And I'm not trying to say that you are responsible for anybody rejecting the faith, but we
Right.
do have to own our part that may have contributed. After you've established that this is a safe place you can talk, then I think you have to establish how you're going to have those conversations. Don't wade in and try to fix their problem. That is too overwhelming for someone that's in a difficult situation. You're sitting with them, you're asking appropriate questions. Do you feel safe right now? You're establishing that they matter to you more than the situation, their humanity, their personhood. So, are you safe? What can I help with? Would you like me to pray with you? Always get permission, because when someone is being abused, that's the one thing they're never allowed. That person that is, even if it's just someone who's overly controlling, which is a form of abuse, but we don't always call it that, they're not ever asked permission for anything. So you want to make sure that you're presenting a persona that is diametrically opposed to their abuse, because you're not only helping them, you're modeling what healthy behaviors look like. And that is key for them to know, oh, it doesn't have to be like what I'm getting over here. So starting out with those kinds of things, it's really tricky when you talk about the one-on-one. Especially if you have a male youth pastor and a female student. But honestly, in today's age, you could still get accusations and innuendos happening with a male and male. Ask if that person minds if someone sits in and let them choose who sits in, because again, they need to have some control over the situation. If they cannot bring themselves to speak with another person, and let it be an adult. Do not bring another minor in on this, because they will obviously say, well, my friend Susie here, that's who I want. No, this is not Susie's problem. You don't need to get another minor
Yeah,
involved in
no,
this.
you don't want another. No.
If they absolutely cannot bring themselves to speak in front of another person, I would hope that your church has some area that has audible privacy, but not visual privacy. So be somewhere open in that way. Get as many eyes on you as you can. And again, not to feel like they're being spied on,
Right.
but just for both of your sakes. You don't want any false accusations. Those are rare. They are very rare, but they happen.
Yeah.
And again, you also want to show this person, this is not something so shameful that we cannot let anybody know what's going on. They're already feeling that way, and you don't want to feed into that.
Right. And public, right? Just being public. That could just be anywhere, somewhere in the sanctuary that you're having a conversation and people are talking and those type of things. Where you don't have to, the worst thing you could do probably, correct me if I'm wrong, is go to your office or go to some away place and say, oh, we needed to talk about this over here. It's probably not the wisest decision.
And be strong enough to be able to say, if you are in an open area, you know, you're kind of off, but it's open. You don't want anybody approaching you. So make sure that you are strong enough in yourself that if you see somebody approaching you, you give them one of these. You don't break.
And for those who are listening, she put up a hand.
Sorry.
It's okay. And for those who are listening, she put up a hand and says, hey, just stop right there. I'm in a moment right now. I need space to have a conversation here. Hang back for a minute.
Because you don't want to break the flow if that person is finally able to speak. And again, you're communicating to that person, you are my priority in this moment. And that may not be something they've ever gotten from anyone. So that kind of leads us into something that I am really passionate about is we're not just caring for this person's physical safety in that moment. We are finding ways to care for their emotional and their spiritual safety as well. Because that is an area that I think we don't do as well in churches. We're big on let's have active shooter training, which is good. We do need to know how to respond if that happens. But statistically speaking, that is much less likely to happen than the fact that you've got multiple girls in your youth group in extremely unhealthy relationships.
Yeah. And I'll go back to something too. The fact that youth pastors, if you're those that are watching, those that are listening, you know, you don't need to know all the details, because I think this is important too, that these are very much what Lori is saying, overarching questions. You don't need to know the dirty details. That's none of your business. Your business is to make sure that this young person is able to get to a place of safety, to both emotionally, physically, spiritually, and those details are not your business. So they're just not. So stick with those big overarching questions, like Lori said. That's going to be the most helpful. So, and as we move into the second part of that, if a youth pastor says, I don't know if my youth ministry is safe or not, how do I know? How do I know whether it is, or whether it isn't? How can youth pastors make their youth ministries safer?
Well, I would start with doing what we call a risk assessment. You've got to not just look at your own observations, because we all have our own, you know, inherent biases. We see things in the most favorable light, the way we want to see them. We want to see our ministries as performing the way we hope that they are. And so that's not a criticism at all. It's just a human limitation. Yep. So I would start with some surveys, and they have to be anonymous.
Right, right.
I worked for a company once that said they put out an anonymous survey. They got some feedback they didn't like, and so they asked the IT department to reverse engineer to see where the comments came from. And that is just the unhealthiest culture in a parachurch or church type, in any setting. That's incredibly unhealthy, but especially if people who claim to hold and carry forth the truth.
Right. Well, it muddies the waters, because if you're knowing who's doing that, then that affects decisions going forward as to the choices you make.
People won't be honest with you. They just won't. You need honest information. Data analysis is worthless if your data is corrupted. So ask your volunteer leaders, what are we doing well? Are we not doing well? Are there areas where you're concerned about safety? And make sure you say physical, emotional, spiritual, because when people hear the word safety, security, they simply think, is anybody getting beat up? Is anybody bringing a gun to youth group? And they stop there. So get that information and see what people think. That is the best place to start. And I'll tell you, if you can find a mechanism to do this, reach out to people whose kids don't come to your youth group. Find out why. Yeah. I have talked to parents that say, you know, oh, I would never force my kid to go to youth group. It's like Lord of the Flies there. And they were serious. They actually felt that being in the youth group was going to be more detrimental to their child's well-being. And that should break our hearts. That should absolutely wreck us and motivate us to say, to the best of my ability, my youth group's not ever going to be like that.
Right. Yeah. The youth pastor does have to take a look at that, because if the youth pastor doesn't have any control, mm-hmm. right, if they don't have any standards, if they don't have a code of conduct, which, by the way, youth pastors, I'll drop it in the show notes there. I do have a form, not a form, but really a worksheet where you can work out your own code of conduct, where that's where everybody kind of knows what the standards are. That's kind of important. But yeah, I've had, yeah, those that's an observation I don't think that youth pastors think about, is that outside opinion as to why a student doesn't come. They just have their, you know, their own kids, and they get very, you know, dialed in to, yeah, you know, what's in front of them versus what's around them.
And that's why I offer the consulting services that I do. I can be that person that doesn't have any preconceived notions about what's going on in your youth group. And I don't have to be your friend long-term, so I can be brutally honest with you, because I love the church. I know it's easy to look at the things I'm saying that, well, you know, we're not doing this well, we're not doing that well. It's not because I'm trying to tear the church down. It's because I love the church so much that I want her to be what God has called her to be.
And nobody wants to feel like they're, I think the thing is that people, just like people can't handle criticism or feedback, that they see, the youth pastors see it as a failure, that it's just another thing on top of them that they're not taking care of, or they're not doing right. You know, pastors in general, egos are fragile. If you're the leader, your ego's a little fragile anyway, because you don't want to hear this feedback or this criticism or those type of things, because you're already feeling pressure from other places. But it's critically important that you listen to feedback and listen to constructive criticism, always weighing whether or not the feedback you're getting is helpful, or is it just a pile on?
Right. Yeah. That is not something I ever, ever intend to do. But I want to challenge people. I know it is hard to get feedback that isn't positive, isn't what you want to hear. And a lot of times it's not fair. Remember, I was on a church staff. I got those emails. I had things emailed to the elders about me where the people wouldn't confront me directly. I get what that's like. But I also just really want to challenge you that you have a reputation in your community. Everybody knows which church is, you know, the youth or the party youth. You know, these youth have all the super strict rules. These youth have this. You have something you're known for. So figure out what that is. Figure out if that's what you want to be known for. And then realize that as you start to build trust, as you start to show people that you know you're not perfect, but you're trying so hard to love well and to serve well and really restore to the church that idea of sanctuary, a safe place to run to, that's when revival starts.
Yeah.
So if you will, you know, put on that thick skin, if you'll swallow your pride just a little bit, these types of exercises and making these little tweaks and moving forward can have an unbelievable kingdom impact.
100%. I think a lot of youth pastors are concerned or whether or not the kids think they're fun. And they really should be thinking about whether the parents think they're competent. Because I don't think competency hits the mind of the youth pastor as to the trust factor, as to, you know, people are their parents. I know you're trying to win the favor of the kids, but you're really trying to win the favor of the parents. You can, you know, win the kids all you want, but if the parents think you're not safe, if the parents think you don't have control, if the parents don't think you're competent, then all that other stuff's going to go away. And you're going to say, well, what happened? What, you know, why did this happen? Well, you needed to focus on competency, that you were a competent leader, that you took care of kids, that you loved, like Lori says, that you loved well, that you were taking into consideration some things that you were not taking into consideration before. One quick note on safety measures, volunteer background checks, yes or no?
100% yes, cannot get by without them. I'm sorry. I know that makes some people really annoyed. But let's look at it from a purely practical dollar and cents. We're in the budget meeting with the elders. If something happens, you did not run a background check on that person, you have just set your congregation up for a lawsuit that could completely destroy your entire church. So it's called due diligence. We do it in businesses. We should do it in businesses. Now you have to understand, even though you definitely have to do that, a background check is only going to show you people who have been caught. And what people don't understand, and this is a somewhat dated statistic, I want to say this is probably 5-6 years old, but it can't have changed that much. I'm going to make you guess. The average pedophile, when they are finally caught, and not just caught, but they're actually prosecuted and they're actually convicted, because that's when the flags start getting raised. How many victims do you think they've had at that point? Put you on the spot.
I can't even think. There's no number comes to mind.
I've had people guess, oh, it's probably scary high, like 15. And I'm like, it's scary high, like 117.
Shoo.
Yeah. Oh, so, boy. You know, we're not talking about, oh, it just was true love between these two people. Predators will take any opportunity they can. They have almost always multiple victims. So don't just stop at that background check. Yeah. Do that, but know that it's a first step. Look at their social media. You would be amazed the things that people put on their social media that really bring up some questions. And so then you can ask this person, hey, I saw this on your social media. And people will put stuff out there publicly. I when I was working in the domestic violence court, we had a guy who he was court ordered not to have any weapons. Look on his social media. He's got a picture of himself holding guns in both hands and guns all around him. If you have the opportunity, talk to people, especially if you have any reservations, you know, that little gut check. We ignore those little gut checks, but I'm telling you, that's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And follow up. By the way, if you have a place on your application or whatever you're doing, follow up on the references. If they put a reference of a church, or if they put a reference, call them. It's, you know, it's worth a phone call to, you know.
I've read so many case files about abusive adult and youth pastors who just got passed from church to church to church. You know, like you said, we want to handle it in-house. We're not going to let everybody know. And those subsequent churches, had they just made phone calls, could have stopped the cycle of abuse right there, but they didn't.
Well, listen, I got one more question for you, maybe two more questions, but do you offer resources to, whether it's checklists or to pastors or youth pastors, you know, how they can educate themselves, those kind of things. What do you have that a youth pastor can get a hold of?
I do. I have a resource that's out on Amazon. It's called Reclaiming Sanctuary, Enhancing Physical, Spiritual, and Emotional Safety in Our Churches. It is not specifically youth-centric. It's really for the church. But if you're just not at a place where your church is ready to embrace that church-wide, the principles still would apply to any level of ministry. And it has something that I think is very helpful. It has policy and procedure templates. So like you talked about, you know, a checklist or a set of tools for, you know, what's our expected behaviors. When you're in the middle of a crisis, that is not the best time to really get a good handle on how you should be handling the crisis. Figure out ahead of time, this is what we're going to do if. I like to play that game called what if. What if this happened in my youth group? What would I do? Figure that out ahead of time as best you can. And it also helps level the playing field, because we've all seen, well, this person did something and boy, they were chucked. But this person did something, and because they had some sort of tie to somebody in the hierarchy, they didn't. But if you've got policies and procedures, they should apply to everyone. And it takes kind of the weight off you as the youth pastor. Well, hey, it's in the policies and procedures. Yeah. So even if you're the one that ends up writing most of them, which I don't suggest, I suggest putting together a team. And there's a chapter that goes through who should be on your team, so that you get, again, that varied level of insight from people. But then get your elders or your board or your deacons or whoever's in charge of things, get them to sign off on it so that they can't later say, well, we didn't know you were doing that. Or I offer consulting services, because I would do this when my girls were younger. They're both grown now. But I would say, you know what? Blame me. Blame me for everything. I don't care. I don't need to be your friend's friends. So if they're trying to pressure you into something you don't want to do, I would, but my mom would kill me. If that's the easiest way you can get yourself out of that situation, then do that. And sometimes having that outside voice come in and say, I see some issues with the way this volunteer is handling things. And if you're having a hard time gracefully moving them out of that position, I'm happy to say, I've evaluated this situation, and for these reasons, I think that it's in the best interest of the church to blah, blah, whatever. Then it's somebody else doing it for you.
Yes, that takes the pressure off youth pastors, that if there are procedures, you don't have any problem telling somebody no if there's a procedure or a protocol in place that allows you to say no. Say, look, that's not, hey, I didn't make the rules. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you did, but in reality, you say, look, I have to tell you no, or I can't allow this to move forward, or I can't allow this certain thing to happen, because that's in our rules, that's in our bylaws, that's in our, you know, our standards, whatever it may be. Those things that you're talking about and working, I have a feeling that youth pastors, if you read Lori's book, you can take this as a template and simply put it right on top of your youth ministry, work it out. Like I said, the youth pastor oftentimes is leading the charge in a lot of things, evangelism, discipleship, outreach, and maybe the youth pastor needs to lead the charge in safety sometimes, because if the church does not do that, well, then maybe the youth pastor says, look, we got to have these things in place. You're watching it from just the micro, but maybe it needs to happen macro, is the fact that, you know, get a hold of Lori's book, and there'll be a link down in the description below where you say, look, I'm going to work through this for myself. And then, like Lori says, bring it to your pastor, bring it to your board, bring it to people that are going to be the people who say yay and nay on things, and say, look, this is kind of important. This is kind of a big deal. And if you do the work, youth pastor, can I tell you what, if it benefits nobody else but yourself, then that's it. That's fine. But at least you will have done the work and laid some groundwork for your church to be able to look at it as well.
And when you put together a team, that team can champion this with you. Then you're not alone when you go to the pastor and the boards and everything. You've got a group of people that say, this is important and we need you to look at this.
Yeah. Well, where can people get a hold of you? I heard, you know, that you have a podcast, you have those things. Give people all the details, as if they need some resources, or if they need to just get a hold of you to ask other questions, or if they need your services, God forbid, tell the people where they can reach you.
Probably the best way to look at the resources and find out all the different things I'm doing is my website, theunlovelytruth.com. That's the name of my podcast. You can email me at Lori, L-O-R-I, at theunlovelytruth.com. You message me on social media. I'm on LinkedIn, The Unlovely Truth, Instagram, The Unlovely Truth Podcast, Facebook, The Unlovely Truth. So any of those places, just send me a message and I'd love to start a dialogue with you and just see how we could work together to accomplish your goals.
Yeah, Lori, thank you so much. That is such great information. And I hope that those that are watching, those that are listening, are going to get down to the links down there, start getting this stuff started in their church, and then be able to put into practice some of the things that you shared today. Thank you so much for sharing those things today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to share this episode with somebody in your church who needs to know about how to make the youth ministry safer. Maybe you're struggling to emphasize that, hey, we need background checks. Hey, we need to be careful of this or careful of that. Go ahead and share this episode with your pastor, with somebody on, you know, some committee, somebody that's in charge of budgetary things that need to get you these background checks. All the things that we talked about. If you need some help, share this episode with them. Maybe we'll open their eyes. Maybe they'll say, you know what? You're right. We need to invest a little bit more in making our students and our children safer in our church. And listen, if you're brand new to the podcast, thank you so much for checking it out today. Thanks for being a part. I hope that you'll hit that follow button and you'll get episodes like this every week. And if you're a regular, as always, I appreciate your time and your attention. If you have not left a review yet of the podcast, I would love for you to do that as well. Don't forget all the links to Lori's stuff and to the Youth Pastor's Guide to Graduating Your Class with Style. That's all down in the show notes. Don't forget that. But most of all, don't forget that if nobody has told you lately that you're doing a good job, let me tell you, you're doing a good job and you're only going to get better. And I'll catch you in the next episode.